Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. April 17, 2020. Do not wait for a return. We will all leave quarantine and enter a new world with a different economy, with different priorities and prospects, with other limitations and opportunities. The better we understand it now, the easier our acclimation will be. Despite the drama that the media love so much when adequate experts and sober-minded people reflect on the current stage of development, they do not regret the past and face the future with hope. Their common denominator is undeniable: scientific and technological progress as we knew it, slowed down a long time ago and placed the world before global threats, which are its integral side effects. Simply put, on the previous path, we destroyed ourselves by mercilessly wasting resources and instilling the paradigm of consumer degradation in people's minds. The Guardian columnist Denny Dawling believes that the coronavirus has become an emergency alarm, a pressed emergency brake button that will help humanity wake up and move on to other tracks. It is time to break the stupor. We were told that we are moving toward a bright, enlightened, cultural, civilized world, but at the same time, we were led into the dark reality of international corporations, international capital, endless work, helpless unemployment, constant environmental crises, and a total dullness. However, trends are breaking down whether we want it or not. The future is knocking on the door, and it is not what we have seen in the past. If we reject and ignore it, the world runs the risk of falling into turbulence compared to which the coronavirus will appear as child's play. And therefore, it is necessary to respond to this alarm call right now. According to the wisdom of Kabbalah, each new stage includes 5 steps. First, it is implicitly born, then it actually appears, then we begin to pay attention to it, then we resist the changes we face, and finally we accept them for lack of another way out. In this maturation algorithm, the coronavirus itself will not be a decisive trigger. To some extent, it wears us out of the old, but it does not allow us to get used to the new, and does not reveal or clarify itself in our minds so far. Nevertheless, the process has started, and with time, it will occur to us that forgetting about it as a nightmare will not work. Then we will think about how to build our future lives, and we will inevitably have to float above the fog. The essence of the current situation is that it requires changing socio-economic relations and adopting a new approach to budget allocation. Since 2008, it has become clear that in times of crisis, people will have to be provided with a decent life. Now we are beginning to understand, life should not only be tolerable but generally procured for on the economical level, and meaningful, integral, mutually enriching on the human level. This is what the period of self-isolation brings us to, and the world cannot wait for the end of it. Now, out of hopelessness, we are depriving ourselves of our former joys because we understand that everyone is responsible for each other. But we are responsible for each other even without the virus. This is the key lesson, and you must not miss it. The contours of a future society emerge as more uniform, caring, and interconnected. Everything needs to be gradually restructured for it: schools, professions, systems, and views. At first, all this will seem artificial, raw, and awkward. What can you do? Shoes need to be worn, fruits must be grown, children must be educated. But this will allow the world to enter an inevitable, new era without excesses caused by its total rejection. And here, we, the people of Israel, have a decisive role to play. Why? Because we have always been open to the new. We did not just accept it, we brought it closer and shaped it. Surprisingly, two opposites live in us: a steadfast commitment to our original foundations and a fantastic readiness for change, unprecedented adaptability, eternal search, and eternal impulse. Unfortunately, we do not want to understand ourselves, where it comes from, and what it means. But time does not wait, It clearly demonstrates to the world that these qualities of ours are now becoming critically important. We are able to understand and accept the new by showing a good example to everyone. In the meantime, while we sleep in quarantine, other nations of the world hate us more and more. They do not recognize the true causes of this hatred, but they feel that we are harming them. Today, of course, we are accused of this pandemic, and at the same time, vaccines are expected from us. In reality, the world indiscriminately expects from the Jews a cure for the main ailment, selfishness. And until people get it, anti-Semitism will flourish. After all, it is imbued in humanity ever since the Jews became a nation at the foot of Mount Sinai. Therefore, only one thing will help us and the world in the end, the awakening of Israel from hibernation. This is another lesson of the coronavirus. No matter how much we shrug it off, it will not help. They still expect help from us even when we are being stigmatized and accused of completely delusional sins. What can we give the world? What will it accept from us with sincere gratitude and recognize as paying off debts? Communication. We can give the world a human connection that will solve all problems. We can form a society that meets the challenges of the times. In our century, this is called by the pejorative term socialism, but I am not afraid of this word. Yes, socialism is also our offspring. And although on it stands the ignominy of the Soviet experiment, it is only because you must not pluck an unripe fruit, it is impossible to forcefully impose relationships for which neither people nor circumstances have ripened. This was best described by Mark Golansky, Doctor of Economics, who in 1987 spoke of the impending collapse of the USSR as if he had seen it with his own eyes. The time of capitalism, he writes, is the modern period of development, and the time of socialism is the future period of maturity. These two systems are actually two successive stages of the existence of mankind, and it is better for them not to intersect in time. Capitalism will not be fit for a mature society. To maintain the achieved standard of living, society needs a system that is more resistant to environmental turmoil and less sensitive to profitability. Such a conclusion is unequivocally led by forecasts predicting at the time of the transformation of capitalism into socialism such a high level of integration of the world capitalist system that it becomes one and indivisible. We are approaching this milestone now. And the coronavirus is in fact a part of the environmental problems that humanity is facing. Kabbalah adds to this another layer that links everything together. Today, we are faced not with nature but with ourselves. Nature is not spontaneous, it is our mother, and it always meets our level of development. And today, the pressure on nature is caused by the fact that the time has come for us to grow and change. The world is almost ripe. And who will help it realize what is happening if not us? If we want to be healthy, the coronavirus scatters us in different directions and says, if you want to be healthy, you cannot be in contact with each other. Do not come closer than 2 meters, keep your distance. However, many jobs will not be able to continue in this manner, and human society will not be able to function normally, the country, the family, and the world. What is to be done? You can come closer to each other but only if you wish good for your neighbor. If I get closer to another person not to use him, but for his benefit, then I will begin to see that the virus in this form is not contagious, it does not separate us, but it allows us to connect. It is only because we approach each other driven by self-interest and by wanting to use others that the virus begins to infect us and cause disease between us. The contradiction is in the fact that from nature's point of view, we are all connected to each other, but our own inner nature rejects this mutual dependence. It recognizes only a self-serving connection. If we want to unite for the common benefit so that everyone is happy, the virus will not interfere with us. On the contrary, it will become useful and will only strengthen our connection. However, Do not expect that the coronavirus will allow us to get closer to each other and find a vaccine against it if we do not change ourselves. After all, if we just go back to the old way, why did it appear? The virus will leave us only if we change our attitude toward nature. It shows that egoists like us should not get close to each other, and it sends us home in quarantine. It gives us an opportunity to get acquainted with a new reality. The coronavirus says, "Do you think we should open more and more new businesses?" Wrong. Stop ravaging the world, stop poisoning the air and water. You must build a new life in a new way. In nature, there is a formula of balance between all its parts. We can see it in all the laws of nature, physical, chemical, biological, and zoological. All the laws are based on the balance of positive and negative forces, plus and minus, good and evil, bestowal and reception. Therefore, we will not be able to do anything against the coronavirus. We have crossed the red line by throwing nature out of balance. We polluted the oceans and the atmosphere. Everything that people have touched with their dirty hands is soiled. We need to correct our attitude toward nature and toward each other. I do not think that there is a quick solution. Most likely, the coronavirus will stay with us for many months. There are several ways to resist the virus: introduce a general quarantine, as has been done in most countries, or continue with life as usual and hope the epidemic will eventually end by itself, as they decided to do in Sweden. Yet, the only effective method is to change the nature of man, our attitude to general nature, to the inanimate, vegetative, and animate world, and especially to the relations between people. Humanity must exist as an integral part of the entire reality, that is, to act for the benefit of it instead of destroying our poor earth. We will all have to learn how to treat nature as a living organism and maintain balance by clear formulas. The goal of the coronavirus is to change human nature. After all, human beings are the only element of nature that harms it. We alone are not in balance with nature. Human beings have free will and are not controlled by natural instincts like inanimate matter, plants, and animals. This is why we must take control of ourselves on our own, and this has not been done in any country. Therefore, the virus will not go anywhere yet. What should we do to make the virus disappear? It is very simple. Nature is an integral system where all parts are connected and support each other. Humanity also needs to become a part of this system that supports, binds, balances, and promotes even greater integration of all elements of nature. This is our responsibility as human beings. We have great power and must treat nature with care, like a mother, like a perfect integral system. If we do this consciously and with understanding, we will live happily. If not, new viruses will come, one after another, until they wipe us off the face of the earth. From CaptVest Global Perspective, April 10, 2020. There is no return to the past world. Coronavirus will help humanity to start thinking about its future instead of thinking about what to buy and how to have fun. The virus has already done its job and has cleared our thoughts. Now we just need to figure out where we are going. Today we do not need to explain to anyone that our life is worth nothing. The virus has already explained everything to us. But the question remains, what should this life be aimed at? Building a group, a spiritual partsuf, is the same as building a temple, the house of the Creator, in which the quality of bestowal, the force of love that unites us together, that is, the upper force, can reside. But I see that yesterday I strove for such an attitude and thought about it, and today I do not want anything. I wake up in the morning without any desire to see anyone. We have a meeting with our friends at noon and I do not want to meet with them. What should I do? It is written that every day we should build the temple anew. It is a good thing that it disappears. It is a sign of progress if all yesterday's achievements disappear like water in the sand and you have to start all over again. Then I work again and again on building the temple, the ten, in order to include as much as possible, the whole world, where everyone acts in mutual bestowal and love. In this temple, the force of love and bestowal, which is called the Creator, will reign and fill all desires united by love. Do not think it is too far away from us. Who could have imagined that the coronavirus would come and change our whole world, our whole life? Huge factories, banks, corporations, billions of dollars, armies, everything that humanity has built for thousands of years is now disappearing. There will be nothing left. They will not be able to continue to operate after the virus disappears. The virus will change our entire life, erasing everything old. Thus, the virus creates an empty space in humanity that we need to fill with love and care for each other, with the attainment of the force of bestowal that is unfolding between us. We may think that we cannot do this, but we can do it. All we have to do is open a small hole the size of an eye of a needle and the Creator will open the gate to a new world for us. Gradually, we will feel that the whole world is included in the ten. The more we try to influence the world from the ten, the more all the forces will be concentrated within the ten. As a result, the ten will contain all reality, including the Creator. First of all, I advise you to forget everything that was. Financial crises and other problems are all in the past and there is no return. We must understand that the old world will not return. What will the new world be like? The way we will build it. Therefore, we must once and for all stop lamenting about the past. The old world no longer exists in nature. There are no systems that would allow us to return to the pre-crisis state and to function as before. Furthermore, if any of these systems still remain, we need to get rid of them, to clear the place. The world will be completely new. God forbid it would keep the old form. After all, it was facing complete collapse. It was on the threshold of world war and environmental disasters. So why regret what was? We need to build a new world. In any case, it will be built. But it is better that it will be built according to our desire so that we will want this construction and will help it. This is called making your desire like the desire of the Creator. This is what we need to do, and then we will succeed. And if we do not, will we fall back into bad habits and repeat the same mistakes? We have built a system in our world that we have only confused ourselves with. The system required us to fly from one end of the world to the other, to work continuously, and to send our children to different activities so that they would not suffer from their parents not being at home. We built a system that deceived us, that created the illusion we were living. We became slaves to this system, we started it, but it tied us up. Isn't that enough? The system could no longer continue to work. Look at what has become of United Europe, what terrible mistakes they made on the way, taking in strangers. There are many more examples. America is torn by disputes between liberals and conservatives, Russia and Ukraine, which have become enemies, the Israeli-Arab conflict. Just look at what we have come to. We must think of a new world. The virus gives us this opportunity, but we have to help it. We cannot dream of returning to the old world, we can only look forward to the new one. The new world should be a world of bestowal, love, and mutual care. I really hope that the virus will not pass without a trace and that it will lead us to a new world. Yet, this is only possible if we want the new world and will ask for this to happen. Our prayer is very important, because apart from our Benny Baruch group, there is no one to ask the Creator to strengthen the forces of bestowal. This is exactly the state of Passover when the children of Israel sighed from the labor, and they cried out, and their cry ascended to God from the labor. Let's hope that this will happen. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, March 19, 2020. Why is nature punishing us with coronavirus? The more we develop, the stricter nature demands that we keep balance between reception and bestowal. We are unable to keep the balance, And so the more we advance, the more we suffer. These are not evil forces that are turning against us, but the imbalance between the forces of reception and bestowal are becoming larger and larger. The force of reception, the will to enjoy, constantly grows, but it is not compensated, corrected, by the desire to bestow. This is why nature, as if, punishes us. It is not a primitive system where we receive punishment instantly and would understand what is happening, like if you put your hand in fire, you would get burnt so you know next time not to do it. But the system of nature is enormous and very complex, and so when we receive a negative reaction somewhere, we don't exactly know where it comes from and why. It follows that learning doesn't come easy to us. Humanity hasn't realized yet that egoism harms it and causes all misfortunes in the world. We don't blame our own egoism, which constantly grows in us, commands us, and forces us to receive always only for our own sake by any means. We are not able to understand this, and everyone thinks that everything is fine with him or her. Humanity does not see that its will to enjoy is the evil force. Moreover, egoism is the engine of progress, and without it, it is impossible not to return to the caves. Therefore, we have no choice but to develop our egoistic desire more and more and try to give it the various satisfactions it demands. Lately, we have been running ahead fueling the consumer desire ourselves in order to sell more and gain more in our egos. This defines our generation. We no longer produce products that are essential to life, but we get very sophisticated in trying to fulfill the whims of our reckless egoism. This is what nature is punishing us for. We use our hypertrophied, unbridled will to enjoy that demands things that are totally unnecessary for life. The will to receive is part of nature, and it turns out that we use nature incorrectly. Instead of bringing the system of nature into harmony, we use the will to receive at our whim and bring nature out of balance. Instead of keeping the correct balance between the force of reception and the force of bestowal, we create imbalances in one direction or another and thereby distort nature. As a result, various pests break out to us from nature. We open the door for them ourselves through our incorrect relationships with each other. Where did the coronavirus come from, or other viruses that will manifest in the future? It is only from the incorrect, egoistic connection between all parts of human society. We are at the highest degree of nature, thus by our twisted relationships we cause distortions at the lower levels, the animate, vegetative, and even inanimate nature. At the still level we see that the entire globe is exploding from cataclysms, typhoons, volcanic eruptions, global warming, or glaciation. Distortions at the vegetative level will bring us to the point where we won't have anything to eat. At the animate level we will see the outbreak of various viruses, and there might be thousands of them. Besides, we are yet to see the infestation of locusts, like in the Egyptian plagues. We cause all these plagues with our own hands by relating to each other in a distorted way. By this we engender all sorts of ugly manifestations at the lower levels that consume all the results of our labor like a cancerous tumor. Under such circumstances, the coronavirus is a correction, compensation, for the distortions we produce at the spiritual degree in the connection between us. As a result, the distortions of even lower levels are being revealed, and force us to change to the side of correction. Thanks to the coronavirus, we already manufacture fewer goods, travel less, and have less fun. Humanity has calmed down and appeased its arrogant selfishness that is destroying the entire planet. If the epidemic gets worse, the world will stop completely. Everyone will stay at home instead of flying from one end of the world to the other. We will stop doing all sorts of stupid things. Yesterday, the news showed a completely empty airport. This is a correction. Why do people need to rush someplace? Now we will have time to think about why we are doing this. Suddenly, we will get terrified, what we are doing. Why did we go somewhere and spend money we had to earn by loading ourselves with additional work? Now we can sit down quietly and think. Indeed, there is something to think about. We can communicate with each other, do something useful. What is the benefit of staring at some stones in Rome or Paris? I'd rather look at my friends, neighbors, and family. Finally, I will see my children because I've already forgotten what they look like and their names. I will ask my son, "Dearest, how is it going at school?" And he will answer, "We haven't been going to school for a long time already, we study online." This way we will have time to chat a bit and to get to know each other. It turns out that this is a correction. It is useful for humanity to stop and feel its powerlessness and inability to control everything. It is possible to stop us in a second and do anything with us. If tomorrow a virus appears in agriculture, what will we eat? This is what we should be thinking about instead of killing each other and playing political games. You cannot act in egoism if you have nothing to eat. Then we will start thinking about life, not about controlling the whole world, each in their own arrogance. From the second part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, March 5, 2020. Writings of Balha Sulam, the Peace. Coronavirus comes from the future. Coronavirus will help oblige us to connect more with each other. This seems paradoxical because we now see that the communities where there were closer connections between people were hit hardest by the virus. How does a virus help us connect if it divides us? This happened because we were united on the basis of egoistic desires. But if we connect only in order to help each other, to acquire a common mind and feeling, a common understanding and attainment, then we will rise above the virus. Nature did not give the virus the task to divide us. The virus separates us only because we are egoists and want to harm each other. But if we want to connect, then the virus will not act against us. It does not work that way. The virus proceeds from the general law of the universe, where all the opposing forces of nature are connected together into one whole, including people connected as one person. The coronavirus comes as if from the future, from our more advanced state. It turns out that it is moving us forward to tomorrow, into a state of unity and understanding that we belong to one nature and are obligated to become one person with one heart. And the virus will certainly do its job. From CAB TV's Global Perspectives, April 10, 2020. My article in Newsmax, "If we take care of ourselves first, we'll aid nature." A little while ago, The Guardian interviewed the UN's environment chief, Enger Andersen. According to the paper, Andersen said that nature is sending us a message with the coronavirus pandemic, that humanity was placing too many pressures on the natural world with damaging consequences. Andersen warned that failing to take care of the planet meant not taking care of ourselves. It is true that we are placing too many pressures on nature. It is also true that these pressures are destroying our environment and harming ourselves. But in my view, Miss Andersen's words embody our biggest mistake. Saying that failing to take care of the planet means not taking care of ourselves puts the cart before the horse. It is ourselves, our relationships with one another that we should tend to first. Only when we learn to care for one another will we learn to care for nature. Only when we learn the meaning of social responsibility will we be able to practice global responsibility. As long as we exploit one another, we will exploit nature just as much. The coronavirus is sending us more than one message. Stay home and keep away from one another is only the beginning. This is stage one, where nature speaks to us like a reproving parent, "You've been bad to one another, so go to your separate rooms." Now that we have been forced to practice social distancing, it is time to take the next lesson, getting closer correctly. The big cleanup. To clean us up from occupations that revert us to our previous ties, nature, via its faithful messenger COVID-19, will make certain that we cannot return to our past engagements. It will continue to haunt us until we accept the new reality, admit that we were wrong, and ask how nature wants us to behave. When we accept that the problem is with us, we will see that replacing fossil fuels with renewable energy will not solve a thing. Indeed, we are ruining the planet through exaggerated use of fossil fuels, wood, pollution of freshwater bodies and oceans, depletion of natural resources, extinction of animals and destruction of wildlife habitats. But we do all that not because we're unaware of the harm that we are doing, we do it because we do not care. We do not need to help nature, we need to change our own nature. If we don't want to change, nature will compel us to in its own way. COVID-19 is but the prelude, not a standalone opera. If we don't understand the message it is sending us, this opera will become a very sad tragedy. So now that we have been separated, let us learn how to connect properly. The first rule of thumb is that if it's more than you really need, it is too much, and it's exploitative to nature and to other people. The second rule of thumb is that whatever I do, whether it's giving or receiving, I do in order to benefit all of society. Just as nature is one inclusive system, we must develop an inclusive worldview that takes into account all people. Society knows what it needs and rewards those who contribute to it with respect and praise. Gradually, these accolades will replace the prevailing self-centered tokens of success such as extravagant wealth, power and a false sense of superiority. By carefully planning our steps toward a world of positive connections, we will build a world that is in every sense higher than our grim reality. By cultivating ties of friendship and mutual responsibility toward each other, we will be able to bid farewell to the old world. Indeed, it is infinitely more satisfying to feel the whole of society, and through it, the whole of reality, rather than limit the world to the reality perceived when all I have in mind is me. Nature, aka reality, is ushering us into a world where we can choose to be good students and learn easily and pleasantly, or rebellious children who learn against their will, but still thank their teacher in the end. Whichever the case, nature will not ease up on us until we learn. What is the property of connection? Question: what is the property of connection? Answer: the property of connection is when we try to unite above our egoism despite everyone's ego. You are an egoist, I am an egoist, but we try to suppress our egoism, and we set ourselves up for connection between us instead. Tuning to connection is the spiritual key, vessel. What we receive above our egoism is called faith above reason. Only in this way can we receive the upper light. The upper light cannot enter into the desire itself, but it enters into the intention to unite. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, February 16, 2020. What desires do we work with? Question: what desires should we connect together, desires for spirituality or any desires? Answer: only for spirituality. The remaining desires disinterest us. They are all different. And why would we care about them? You have some aspirations in life, for example, to become a musician or a shoemaker. It does not matter. I care only about your attitude to the Creator. Only with this intention, with this desire of yours, I want to be in closeness. And all the other desires do not concern me because they are all corporeal. I am not interested in what you do, family, work, hobbies. For me, only one thing is important, your aim toward the Creator, and my aim toward the Creator. If we combine them together, we will become stronger and be closer to receiving the upper light from Him. Question: if someone in this chain has no desire to reveal the Creator, then can this affect the whole system completely? Answer: no. These desires cannot affect the system. Of course, random people might be between us, but they do not affect the others because each person connects according to their desire. And if they do not have a real desire for spirituality, then they don't seem to connect to us. They exist in their animal form, but in spirituality, they are not with us. Question: there are stronger and weaker spiritual desires. Do they absorb each other? Answer: nobody absorbs anything or anybody because all desires are completely different. They are unlike each other. The only thing they can do is connect together. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, February 16, 2020. When someone leaves the group. Question: what happens to the point in the heart if someone comes to the group with enthusiasm and after some time leaves for some reason? Is it possible to see what happens to his point in the heart? Answer: of course. Unfortunately, there are such cases. If someone leaves the group, it means that he goes back to this lowest world and refuses spiritual advancement. As a rule, this comes from the fact that his pride will disallow him to lower himself before his friends and join the group. He needs to understand that no matter how low, small, or insignificant the group might seem to him, he must lower himself, enter into it, and be together with everyone on an equal or even lower level. Read what Rabash writes about inclusion in the group. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, February 9, 2020. Modernization of the soul. A Kabbalist feels the death of the physical body as if one were changing a shirt. If the main thing is me, not the shirt, that is, the soul, not the body, then each time I change shirts, due to this I change, I get more and more elegant attire. There is nothing scary about death except the loss of the ability to make corrections. But if I didn't make corrections in this life, I can calmly return the shirt because I have nothing to regret. Question: why does a Kabbalist work on a correction every time as if starting to live anew, nevertheless have to die at some point to unchange his body? Answer: there is a huge difference between the forms that a person changes throughout one's life and the new form for which one must die. This will be a new reality, a significant modernization, as if I were constantly repairing my computer by installing new programs on it, and at some point, I suddenly found out that the computer itself was no longer suitable and would have to be changed. From third part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, March 11, 2020. Writings of Baal HaSulam, the Peace. Answers to your questions, Part 239. Question: are there among your students, those who are trying or willing to practically test or at least seriously discuss educational methods that are not specified in the sources? Answer: we discuss only the method of Kabbalah. Question: all that exists in the corporeal world is a consequence of spiritual forces. Are spiritual forces not fully attainable even to Kabbalists who are at high levels? Answer: to the measure one's spiritual ascent, the complete picture of upper forces and their descent into this world is understood. New Life 1209. The Root of Social Divisions in Israel.
Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, Nisa Mazoz.
Hello.
And today we'd like to talk about the division within the Israeli society, or more correctly, the dangers that come with it. We're all familiar with the rift itself. What we'd like to focus on today are the dangers that come with it. Be with us, Nitza, please. Yeah. We're going to talk about something really painful today, something that really touches the heart of the Israeli society. When we look at what's going on in the media and the social conversation, we see that there is a very deep crisis, a very strong rift within the Israeli society. Maybe even the worst that we ever had to deal with, at least in modern times. We see that there's hate, and the conversation is very violent. We see that everything is becoming very extreme. And there are those that say, no big deal. There was always a division. There's nothing new. Only today, it's more apparent. It's more exposed. And there are those that say, no, this is something that happened only in recent years. So first of all, let's try and understand the division itself. Why does it seem that it's becoming more extreme? Is it good? Isn't it? There are divisions in every society, in every nation. Different kinds of divisions. But within the Israeli nation, it's much more powerful. And this is because, as it says, that we're a stubborn people. Stubborn how? Because we have an increased will to receive. This desire is not like in other nations. We see it and everyone else does and knows that that's how it is. And therefore, each and every one is as if powerful and feels that he's willing to stand against everyone. And I don't care if it's the prime minister, I can tell him what I think. And it's not like in other nations where everyone nonetheless knows their place, their degree, that this is how I have to speak to this or that person, that I'm afraid of this or that. Here, no one cares about nothing. This is the nature of the Israeli nation, of the Jewish people in general, that in the past, when we were more religious than religion, it tied us more together. It would calm us down, restrain us. We were more afraid of punishments, more drawn to the reward, to be nice people, at least, apparently. On the inside, of course, it's a different problem. And when we move away from religion, and this is something that happens in all sectors, even in the ultra-religious sector, they're becoming less and less. It's called the deterioration of the generations, that we less and less believe in the common way, in the different upper forces of nature that might punish us and so on. But we don't take that into account. And therefore, we are really becoming more and more stubborn from generation to generation, taking no one into account. Here, anyone can yell at the prime minister and doesn't feel that he's less than him in any way, but to the contrary, everyone's smarter than he is. Doesn't matter who the prime minister is. Why is it so that we don't respect the state officials? We don't, and it's impossible. Why? Because we are a free people. So that means what? That everyone was born free of others, equal to others. Once we united around Abraham, who called out, whoever wants to reach the Creator, come with me. Whoever wants to reach the Creator, meaning those that want to reach the degree of equality, of love, of brotherly love, of freedom from all of the limitations of this world, should come to me. And Abraham connected the nation this way. And when he connected them, he taught them that really we're all free of everything, that everyone has to only build himself in a good and nice way toward others, but no one's lesser than others, and no one's allowed to tell the other what to do, but only to give each other a good example. These are wonderful things if they work. But if we can't keep them, then we're like savages. that method that's supposed to connect people together as equals without any limitations, that no one's greater or smaller, and I'd also say that there are no examples from history that he was a king and he was less, some general, and he's a simple worker, and he's a slave, and he's a master, and he's rich. Nothing. There are no such differences within the Israeli nation. And it's not that it doesn't exist now. It doesn't exist in our blood. It doesn't exist in the person himself. I examined myself. I was connected to and I talked with presidents and really great people, multi-billionaires that can buy half the world, and with great scientists. If I did have some kind of feeling of respect, it was towards scientists, maybe. Because really, maybe he has knowledge and so on. But actually, not really. But there simply isn't. It doesn't exist in any Jew. In no Jew is there some kind of attitude of respect toward any other person in the world. Who is he? What is he? Meaning, it's not something that exists inside a Jew. On the other hand, when I was in Russia, when I was in South America, there and here, in South America and in Russia, I felt that people from the inside, they relate to different societies in a graded way. This is more, this is less, I'm afraid of this, I'm less afraid of that, I respect this more, this less. And this is how everyone has this kind of scale inside of them of how they relate to everyone. Jews don't have that. A Jew looks at someone else. Who is he? How can I con him? That's it. It's something really interesting. And again, it comes because Abraham, our patriarch, connected all of us as equals in a good and nice attitude toward each other, an attitude of love, brotherly love. And if we're brothers, then everyone's open, takes nothing into account, everything's good and nice, and, you know, I'm free. I behave everywhere as though it's my bedroom. That's how it is. But when we fell from the spiritual degree of brotherly love and we reached the opposite, unfounded hatred, then from feeling that we're all equal, we've reached a state where we disrespect and disregard everyone. Instead of love, instead of connection, disregard and rejection and alienation, this is what we see. And even worse, that among the nations of the world, throughout history and also now, there is subordination, there is a pyramid, who's at the top, who's at the bottom, different social ranks in every country and every society. He was a graph, a master, something. We don't have that. We had a hierarchy for many years of a sage and an ordinary person. So there was also a kind of relation, but also it's not an obligation. But a wise sage was treated as a wise sage. But that's gone. In our times it no longer exists. And therefore everyone disrespects everyone. And even worse, that if in all countries, in a person, there is some kind of respect toward the state hierarchy, meaning toward someone who's in government, in different positions, and something, even towards police officers. Nothing.
We don't have that either. And also those that are at the top, that are managing the country, they give an even worse example, worse than anyone else, about how they fight and how they behave toward each other. The nation that looks at them sees such a behavior that if this is how they behave, then why should I behave towards my neighbor any differently? And so what follows is that in advance, we're already becoming flawed. So, to sum up what I understood up until now, what's special about the nation of Israel is that feeling that every person has, that he's equal to others, that no one's better than others. On the one hand, it gives everyone the freedom to develop and grow and to become the greatest that he can. On the other hand, it can bring us to a state of disrespect, disregard, regardless of who or what the other person is. How does this situation, which is like a double-edged sword, because on the one hand it sounds really positive that everyone's equal, on the other hand, the negative usage of it, that everyone disregards everyone else, how is it related to the division that we see today? This feeling that I disregard everyone, how does it bring us to the division that we have in the Israeli society? Directly? How? There's no special twist or anything. If we all disregard everyone else, then everyone's like a prime minister, everyone's like the head of a party. He understands better than everyone what needs to be done. And therefore you see how many parties we have, how many opinions we have. So this feeling that a Jew, that an Israeli feels, it's a feeling that no one can tell me what to do unless that person gives a good example, and then I'm willing to respect it. But if I don't get any good example, then I don't respect them. Now, this process causes society to split more and more. If I understand correctly, hierarchy has advantages and disadvantages, but it somehow keeps society. Here, the hierarchy is negative. What do you mean? Because in a correct hierarchy, the more we climb up the pyramid, the more unique the people are. Like in universities, like in science, you can especially see it. Whereas here, those that climb the ladder of control and power, they're worse. They have more disregard. Who's the worst? The one that killed everyone else on the way is standing at the top, and no one can come close to him because he knows how to kill anyone that comes close. That's really interesting. Well, it's well known. Yeah, but it's something that you don't really hear every day. If I'll read different articles or, you know, I'll look for the reasons, you'll get plenty of different reasons on the net. The social media, they incite, and this is our nature. Yeah, and you opened here is something completely different. Something that shows the inner central motive due to which an Israeli cannot stand, really disrespects the opinion of the other. And therefore, we are a very special country. And you can't espouse or use here basic laws of other countries because it simply won't work, right? Okay, after we have analyzed the reason for the division, for the rift, and the inner engine that motivates it, now what I want to ask about are the dangers that exist in the division? What dangers do you see in it? We have security issues in Israel. We have economical dangers, different financial crises and so on that can happen here and around the world that can influence us here. And we can find a few more dangers. I want to put all of these dangers aside and look only at one danger, division. Is it an existential danger for Israel? And why? Because the nation of Israel cannot exist unless they're connected, or at least that they're inclined toward connection, having some kind of plan of how to realize that connection in the future, because otherwise it's not the nation of Israel. The nation of Israel are those 70 nations of the world that lived in ancient Babylon 3,500 years ago. And Abraham, he called out to all those 70 nations that inhabited ancient Babylon back then, that whoever wants to reach connection with others and build a unique group in which they'll feel how good it is to live in mutual help and brotherly love and love another as thyself, should come to him. And many people came, and he connected them, and he said, from this point on, we are called Israel, from the words Yashar Kel, meaning to be aimed straight at the Creator, that we're all aimed at the force of the soul and love. This is called the Creator. This is the upper force of nature. In nature, there are two forces, the force of connection and the force of separation. There's no good or bad, but these two forces, we want to associate ourselves with the force of connection. So let's work on it. And this is how he called that nation, those people that came to him from all the different Babylonian nations, and he made a new nation out of them. It's not a nation, everyone's different, but they connected according to this rule of love another as yourself, meaning that in our roots there is a connection between different people that makes everyone equal and creates this unique society called the Israeli nation or society. Now, meaning we're all different. Exactly, we're all different, and today we can see that too. Like you said, everyone is a world in and of himself, but disregards everyone else. My question is, the division that comes as a result of how different we are, does that threaten the existence of the state of Israel, of the Israeli society? Is it an existential threat? Actually, the state of Israel, compared to other countries, can't exist, prosper, if there's no connection between all the members of the nation. So how is it that the state of Israel both exists and also prospers, and still there's no connection but only separation? We were given an extension. What do you mean? That we can still exist in order for us to reach a connection, because nonetheless we came from the diaspora. And there's an ingathering of exiles here. And you have to build something in order to see what does it mean to do something together, what does it mean to be together. And the upper plan of nature is arranging for us to gather in one place in order for us to start understanding what does it mean to be together, for us to get to know how possible or impossible it is for us to live together, to discover the method of our connection, that only according to this method can we be connected and sustain our country, otherwise we can't. It's a process that those Kabbalists, meaning we who understand this process, have to explain to the entire nation of Israel. If this nation will not learn how to connect despite the differences and the rift, will the country split into sub-countries? No. Why? We'll be thrown back in all directions. What do you mean? We'll go into exile. We'll lose the privilege to be here? Of course, we have no privilege one way or another. What we have here does not belong to us. From above, we really have a kind of surprise, special surprise, that if you try to exist here together, not like it was with Aunt Elena or with the elections that we have here and so on, but in a way that you try to come closer to each other as much as you can, where you feel that you can't, you as if pray, but there's no one to pray to because you're seculars. Both the religious and also the seculars don't know how to pray. But you ask of nature to disclose the force of connection, and then you'll be able to connect with one another and then build both a Jewish society. Jewish, Yehudi, comes from the word Yichud, connection, and also the state of Israel, consisting of the words Yashar Kel, meaning that's aimed straight at the force of love and bestowal. Otherwise, you're not Jews or the nation of Israel. And then what? Then go and assimilate among the nations. What are you together for then? You hate each other. Yeah, there are those that really decide to leave the country, but there are those that stay here. And for the time being, it's flourishing. The way you see it, what threatens the state of Israel, is it the external enemies that we have or the internal enemy, our separation? If you say that separation is our biggest threat, then I want to ask, what could this lead us to? Undoubtedly that we are our biggest haters and enemies. And is it dangerous? Extremely. But this is how it always was. We're always surrounded by enemies, and we're here for 70-something years, no problem. It doesn't need to exist. We're all the time in wars, under threat. We exist all the time because we were given this extension in order to connect ourselves into one nation and all of us into one state. And this time extension, is it about to end? Look, I don't think that we're doing so bad in this regard. We went a pretty long way where we stopped disregarding people according to their ethnical background. Ashkenazians, Sephardics, Yemenians, Jews from Africa. It's already kind of behind us. Do they have new things? You have right and left. You have Russians and ultra-Orthodox. You have Tel Avivians and settlers. We need time for that too. All in all, it's a relatively very short historic period. But gradually, it's passing. We see that also the Russians, they're dispersing in different parties, in different corners. And that's how everyone is. I see that there is a connection and that gradually this diffusion, this mutual connection between all the parts of the nation is working. I can barely imagine myself, even though that I'm not that Russian anymore, living with some woman that just came from the Far East, that she's Jewish somehow, or from India. There's a difference in mentality and culture. Yeah, a few generations have to go by, and so this is how it is. But my son, for example, even though that he was born in Israel, and he's an Israeli, he later got married to a French woman. Today's children, they don't even know how to define themselves because they're made up of different cultures. So with that, we're finished. Well, time finished it, actually. Time went by and these things changed. Now, when we look into the future, I see that you're not really worried about the division. I am, and very much. Because the previous division was a result of us being dispersed in all different directions 2,000 years ago when we went into exile. Nowadays, the division is different. How? Don't you see? It's a division that comes as a result of our ego, that I simply can't connect with you. I can connect with some woman on the bodily level, corporeal level, but to connect with other people, for this I have to annul my ego in order to be connected with them. What is your ego? My ego is that I'm the greatest and there's no one like me. And this is what's standing in our way and the way of our connection. Of course, that's the ego. And this is a threat. Of course, we can't agree on anything. We have 40 parties. Everyone's ready to start their own party. Designate money for new parties specifically for that. And you'll see how many people will be engaged in it. And this is the biggest threat to our country. We're not looking for how to come closer to each other. We're looking for how to control, rule each other. And this is unhealthy. Why? Because it does not allow us to build a nation or a country. You're saying that we're prospering. Well, it's a fact. We're prospering due to the competition that exists between us. But there's no interconnection. And this is the foundation of the nature of our nation, and it doesn't exist. And it's dangerous, of course, because eventually this is what's supposed to support us. We're now headed towards a global, total world crisis in a way that, suppose starting tomorrow, like with this coronavirus, there's no work. No one can or needs to buy anything. Everything freezes down. Yeah. A person just wants to have half a kilo of bread, some water. It's enough. Because you have no choice. And then what? What about all those pretty Jews that can succeed at anything? There's nothing to succeed at. Nothing to do. We'll live like after a locust plague all around the world, like it was in Egypt. I also heard that there is a locust plague starting now in China. In Africa, it already passed. You know what they had there? Look, we're reaching the end of our show. How do we summarize this show? What dangers do you see in the division within the Israeli society? The danger is that the state, not now, but in a few years, if we don't change this, if we don't take care of this, the country will simply fall apart, will disintegrate. The nation will feel that, what's the point of being together? Everyone wants to run away anyway. Give any Jew a suitcase with money, he won't even look back. Dr. Leitman. So on this optimistic note, we will continue. Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Nitza. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.
My thoughts on Twitter April 16, 2020. The coronavirus pandemic is a radical shift of the entire earthly civilization. The onset of replacing humanity's egoistic structure with a world of integral interaction between all inhabitants of the planet. We will now bear witness to the gradual collapse of international trade and business systems. My thoughts on Twitter April 15, 2020. Today we are entering the concluding phase of humanity's program of development, called the Last Generation. The world is becoming similar to the Creator. For the first time, humans aren't warring against other humans, but nature itself is attacking humans. It's no longer a struggle of the egos, but of the Creator against man. We're not going to go back to the old world. We're going to arrive at a new world and become new people. This will happen in stages, but the process has already begun. Nature has its own program that is presently being implemented, and we sense the extent to which we conform to it. Matzah is called the bread of affliction, because we bake it while in poverty, lack of strength, sensations in the heart and understanding in the mind. Yet, with the help of this new form, we can cross the border between the Pharaoh's and the Creator's domains, escaping our egoistic desire to receive to freedom. When we attain unity in the group, I feel that I am willing to neglect everything for the sake of connection with the friends, since with it I can connect to the Creator. I thus come out of Pharaoh's authority and go under the Creator's authority, seeing the tenor as a means that pulls me out of egoistic slavery.